Welcome to Grumpy Young Men on the Believe Network. I am Jason Waller here with my co-host, Alex Mesci. Join us as we take a real look at reality.
Welcome back to Grumpy Young Men on the Believe Network.
You know what that is, bro? Pack a fatty.
Hammer time. All right, Jay, fun shower fact this week.
Let's hear it, bro. I'm ready for it. I need something uplifting.
I don't know if this is uplifting, but the reason people themselves when scared is to remove dead weight so they can run faster.
That's good. That's probably one of the best ones we've had.
It makes perfect sense to me.
I get it. I fully can comprehend that.
Yeah. So let's talk about what happened this week. We got a couple fun things to go over.
For our listeners, we're going to be switching it up a little bit. We're actually going to kind of have a more of a structured format so we can flow. And I think it's going to be good because I think trending now is a new thing that we hear out there often. So we're like, hey, well, let's take what's trending. Let's talk about it and break it down.
Yeah. And even more so, we're not going to take what everybody else thinks is interesting. We're going to pick what's interesting to us.
Correct.
So, a fun little story came out of St. Louis, Missouri this weekend. There was a protest in a gated community, which led to this viral video of a guy in a pink polo shirt with his chest hair exposed, holding an AR-15 with no shoes on. And his lovely wife is, you know, beside him, hand on a hip with the other hand on a pistol, not knowing how to wield the thing. And the funny thing coming out of the Pro 2A community, the only criticism they had was that guy really must not like his wife, considering the fact that he's waving the thing, you know, yelling at protesters, and his wife is in front of the barrel half the time.
Oh, shut up.
So bad in terms of gun safety, but I mean, it was definitely an exhibition of the Second Amendment. And
well, it was one hell of a sight to be seen. It looked like a guy in front of a Beverly Hills mansion. It looked like Scarface almost with his wife out there and they're barefoot. It was pretty priceless, dude, not going to lie.
Yeah, the image was definitely polarizing. But, you know, let's talk about what's going on. So for those that are aware, Missouri is a Castle Doctrine state. It's not a stand your ground state like it is in California.
What does that mean?
So stand your ground, especially what we have in California, is that somebody has to be on your property actively engaging in your harm or the lack of your safety, right? So basically, if you're being attacked in your house, you have the ability to defend yourself.
Right.
Versus in Castle Doctrine, if someone is on your property or trespassing without your authorization, you have the ability to use deadly force to remove them. Now, a lot of people see Texas as the pro-gun state, and it is because they are. However, a lot of people fail to realize that there are other states in regards to the Castle Doctrine that make it so that you don't have to wait for that person to be doing anything. By them literally trespassing is already breaking the law, and therefore it's seen as a translation as intent to harm. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you had the effect of a group of people pushed into a private gated community. So they're not on a public road. They were stepping foot on the couple's property. So that's now
trespassing. Why were all those people trespassing in that community anyways?
So the reason they were there is because the mayor lived in that community. So they wanted to essentially protest for a recall.
A real safe gated community.
Yeah, right. You know, we got a viral video out of it. It kind of stemmed the whole pro 2A or against 2A conversation a bit more. It spurred gun and ammo sales after people saw the effect of, hey, these people actually defended their property. And as you mentioned, the house is, you know, looks like a beautiful community. And all in all, I would say that for the most part, it ended pretty peacefully. Nobody was shot. Nobody was hurt. No property was damaged.
Yeah, you see freaking Humpty Dumpty out there with an AK-47, bro. You ain't going near that guy's house.
Yeah. You see anybody outside with an assault rifle, I mean, as much as you want to loot or rob or do whatever, it'll keep honest people honest.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that was a very interesting thing. And like I said, just a guy in a pink polo shirt with a gun like that. I was like, all right, what's this? So, on that though, you know, the real interesting thing is that you had people on both sides now siding with, I need a gun. And my dad was one of them. He was asking, he goes, hey, how do I get something a little more modern? Because he's tired of having a, you know, Wild West revolver.
Your dad's probably got a cannon stuffer, bro. He's gonna say.
he's just shy of black powder musket.
Right.
But it's funny because he was always the type. He's like, you know, we live in a safe community and Mission Viejo is one of the top 10 safest cities in the United States. And then now after being inundated with all the news and what's been on the news, he's like, I need a gun. It's like, well, you have a gun. No, I need a gun. It's like, all right, well, let's talk about the process, right? You got to go to a gun store, this, that. With COVID, some of them are appointment only now. But with the events, with the protests and people pretty much kind of fearing a lack of public safety, guns are sold out, back ordered, like cannot be found. Good luck. If you miss the train, like you're going to have to go foraging. And it's funny because some of the conversations within families that had a split with gun control, you have the people that never took the opportunity to equip themselves now asking the other side, hey, can I borrow stuff? Which for those that don't know is a crime. You're not supposed to lend your firearm that's registered to you to anybody else that's not you or within your immediate family.
Except in Texas.
Except in Texas.
Oh, you like that? Boom.
So yeah. And for those listening, mind you, we do speak from a more California perspective, but you know, we like to be all inclusive of the whole country. So we will have people chime in from time to time from all corners of the country.
Yeah, no. So gun sales, all time high, ammo sales, all time high. So you got both sides now talking about the gun control, right? Where, I mean, it was not long ago that we were talking about removing guns, right? I mean, it was almost before this, dismantle the police or defund the police. I mean, it was almost like the other topic around stuff like that was around the guns.
Yeah, I think the whole 2A and gun control was a big conversation leading pre-COVID, right after the wildfires. You were talking about, you know, having all these mass shootings and school shootings and concert festival shootings and all this stuff. And people were looking for a solution to try and mitigate that. But my personal opinion is at the end of the day, these people that are committing these atrocities are criminals. And to say that criminals follow the law, well, that's illogically true, right? So to say that gun control is going to reduce the guns getting into criminal hands, I really don't see it, because these guys already have these guns with scratched off serial numbers that may be coming up, you know, from over a border or from off a boat or whatever.
Nowadays, you can just make these things yourself.
There is that too with 3D printing. So, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily the right way to just open it up and let everybody get a gun, or close it down and allow nobody to get a gun. There's,
you know, so I want to talk to you about that, because I know you're, you know, both of us are pro the Second Amendment, and we both believe that, you know, we should right to bear arms. And, but what is your thought process around that? You know, for the people that are anti-guns, I just wanted to kind of bring that as a conversation. And producer Ryan, I'd love your perspective on that as well. But just having a conversation around that, right? Is a lot of people, it's just completely dismantled, get rid of, or, you know, have them, like, is there a middle ground with this conversation?
It's hard to determine a middle ground, I feel like, because a big component as to who and who shouldn't have a gun usually revolves around mental health and the actual well-being of the state of mind of the person buying a gun, right? So if you've never bought a gun before, the process is typically that you go into a gun store, you find what you're looking for, you talk to somebody, get a recommendation, and then you begin the process of actually registering and applying for registration of the firearm. In California, that starts with a firearm safety test and a firearm safety certificate that needs to be renewed every 5 years. To be perfectly truthful, it's like 12 questions that are more or less common sense. But it's nice because I've actually seen people just completely bomb the test next to me. And I'm like, I sure hope you don't sell that guy a gun, because they don't even know how to take care of it. Right. So after you get that, you actually go through the application, you wait your waiting period. And as long as the DOJ is okay with you having the firearm, you go back and pick it up. Right. In other states, a lot of times, especially in Arizona, you go in and you essentially pay cash and you can walk out the same day with a gun. Now, where things get a little bit interesting is the fact that states that have cash and carry laws in terms of gun purchasing typically have less shootings and gun related homicides than states that have these waiting periods.
Okay. Did you know that, Ryan?
No, I didn't know that.
So yeah, there's a correlation between that. So it's obviously showing that background checks are not stopping the wrong people from getting guns. So how do we do that?
Do you know the numbers around that? That's such an interesting fact.
I don't know the exact figures, but I mean, we can go based on recent current events and the number of gun-related shootings in Chicago. Illinois is a pretty gun-strict state. Mm. Chicago is a very gun-strict city. They've had, what, over 150 shootings in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah.
So
isn't it the most dangerous city in the U.S. right now by gun violence and all that?
It flips back and forth between there and Flint, Michigan. I was actually educated by someone who came from Michigan and lived there for many years that Flint and Chicago basically pass the baton back and forth, Flint holding a 6-time annual record. So there was one point where Flint, Michigan, literally for 6 years was the most dangerous place in regards to gun-related homicide and crime and or violence, right? So even Michigan, in regards to being a gun state, is pretty strict in comparison to some of the states that we view as more gun-friendly, like Texas and Arizona, Idaho, Wyoming, and things like that. So when we don't see the correlation in the gun control and these waiting periods and these background checks working in terms of mitigating actual gun violence, then it leads me to believe that the program's not really working. It's broken, right? Then became the question of how do we check mental health to make sure that people don't just have a bad day at work and next thing you know, go postal, right?
Well, my question, not only that, but let's just look at it from this perspective too, is how many of these people in the shootings and different things that are going on, how many of them are legal gun owners?
I think it's a pretty big mix of both that are and aren't. Mm-hmm. I would say a majority are non-legal gun owners, or they shouldn't be owning a gun, especially when we're talking about gang violence, right? Gang related violence. But the thing is that a lot of these weapons and stuff, they're recycled. There's no way to know who actually owns the gun, right? So correct. It's like, you know, you're talking in the streets of like LA or Chicago and there's a drive-by shooting or something and someone gets taken out. Well, chances are the cops don't even find the weapon because somebody just already picked it up because they're going to go use it to hose somebody else.
Yeah.
So going back to like the gun shows and being able to 3D print stuff, the accessibility is there. The challenge is that law-abiding citizens like yourself and me have more challenges and obstacles and hoops to jump over to get a gun that, let's be honest, criminals, if they want it, they'll get it. They'll break the law to get it.
Well, it's funny you say that because I actually tried going to get a gun. It was, what, 5 years ago? You remember when I was going through that process? And I didn't have access to a gun. I actually was not able to have a gun because I had, from my previous record of stuff, and I went and applied, and after 9.5 years, you know, I was like, oh, let's go get a gun and stuff. I got multiple years of sobriety just to have it to protect, be safe at the house, and did everything that you talked about and went to go pick it up. Boom, denied, because it wasn't a 10-year period. And honestly, I totally could see just from, you know, I thank God they didn't give me a gun 10 years or 8 years prior to that. I would not, you know what I mean? So I think some of those laws and some of that effect, I think, is good, because in that state of mind, I mean, looking at where I was in the depths of my addiction and in the depths of all that stuff, I think that was a good precaution. But it's also, I'm just a one person show that we're talking about that, where that's been beneficial, because the larger picture of it, looking at individuals and cities that are experiencing the most violence, and it's not usually by law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, and I like to think that Texas has an interesting policy in regards to guns, being that they're more free in allowing you to carry and conceal and this and that. The quote is, you keep honest people honest, right? And there's a lot of times we hear stories where somebody goes into a store or school or whatever and they start shooting people, and chances are they've had either a criminal background, they stole the gun from somebody.
Mental health issues.
Exactly. You know, there's all these kinds of problems, right? But in Texas, they actually have lower gun crime per capita than a majority of other states, despite having looser gun restrictions.
But how much do you think of that as like environment though? And like them growing up with that? And like, I mean, cause I feel like, let's just say California were to go to that type of mentality and lifestyle. Do you really think that it would result in the same format that Texas has?
I think it could lead to that. However, it wouldn't be instant, like a night and day thing, because there always has to be some sort of test, right? And by test, I'm not saying, you know, someone pushing the boundaries or whatever, but more so seeing the consequences of what happens, right? So let me paint you a scenario, right? Let's say you're in Texas and you're a criminal, and make it so that you want to go rob a liquor store, okay? You have a gun. Now, are you going to rob a liquor store knowing that there's 10 people that are customers in that liquor store that may or may not have a gun? Or would you rather rob a liquor store with 10 customers that you know is illegal for them to carry a gun?
Okay, fair enough.
So if you have people in an armed population, now mind you, you got to control who's armed once again because of mental health and this and that. So by implementing what we have currently, however, allowing people to carry and conceal without basically criminalizing them, because in California, we are technically an open carry state. Now, how ridiculous that is that I can have my pistol on one hip. I can have the magazine for that pistol on the other side of my hip. Both need to be exposed, and the gun needs to be non-loaded. Okay. Versus a knife. You can have a folding pocket knife of up to 3 inches. You pull it out, you stick somebody, it's already done, right? So how am I supposed to defend myself by open carrying a pistol when I have to take the gun from one side, the magazine from other, put them together, rack the gun? By then it's already too late, and whatever was going to happen's already happened, right?
Right.
Versus concealed carry states, you have it concealed, you pull it out, you do whatever you need to do, and that's it.
You can get a concealed permit in California, right?
You can, but good luck. It's just there's no real freedom in it. It's more like a pay to play kind of club, right?
Right.
So it's a very lengthy process. You got to have recommendations and referrals and provide an actual like scenario study of why you need it. So just because you transport largest amount of money is not a good enough answer anymore. It has to have some sort of real tangible reason. Now that also depends every time a new sheriff is voted in. So there's no real clear cut procedure and or criteria. It's basically you file an application based on who the sheriff is in your county, town, city, or state, or whatever, or local jurisdiction. And hopefully your case is good enough and or your campaign contributions or family connections or whatever are good enough to make them sign the piece of paper, right? Now, Texas did something interesting during the initial onset of the protests and when people were starting to fear public safety, in that they put a temporary stay of not needing a concealed weapons permit in the entire state. So whether you had a permit or not, you were now given state protection to conceal carry with no repercussion. Now, I could never see that happening in California.
Well, it won't ever.
And I mean, based on the time, the needs, the timing, what's going on in society, to me, I thought that was a cool move. It still gives people the opportunity. If you don't feel comfortable carrying a firearm outside of your house, don't. There's nothing wrong with that. But for law-abiding citizens with a good head on their shoulders that feel comfortable doing that, I also don't see the harm in that either, because while I don't typically carry outside of my house, I'm going to hope that there's somebody that's a decent shot that's going to be able to protect me just based out of being a good Samaritan, right? Hopefully there's some of those still around. I think a majority of them have been sued for trying to give CPR or help people and, things don't go right. But I feel like we need to reestablish the trust and faith within your own community.
Right.
And I mean, based on watching the news, based on talking to people, times are pretty gloomy. And going back to what we talk about with human connection being the number one source of happiness, we need to bring the community back together.
So good stuff. I mean, good insight, good feedback. I can totally see both sides of what you're saying. And that's, again, why we do this, is just to kind of have conversation around uncomfortable conversations, right? So what would be your takeaway from that then?
I think my takeaway is that within the last few months, we've definitely seen the need of why we have the Second Amendment. But we also see the challenges of the Second Amendment. And, it comes down to who has the authority to say who can and can't have a gun.
So let me ask you this then, is do you believe that there should be background checks for everybody to purchase guns?
Absolutely. I don't see why not. And I feel like there should be some sort of regimented mental health screening as a part of it. So whether it's, when you initially buy the gun and turn it in like a driver's license, you don't need to do it every year.
Yeah.
Every 2 years, I think, is safe. I mean, if you're a police officer or military, then maybe every year, something like that. But like every 2 years, every 5 years, something like that, where it's a touch up. It's like the driver's license test. And being in California, I feel like we have the credibility to say that we have terrible drivers that we allow to go 40 years without ever having to take a driving test.
Yep.
So, we can go 2 or 5 years without a mental health test when we haven't had one to begin with.
Correct. I think that's really good. I think that's something to leave you guys with, is to think about that. I actually would agree with that. I definitely think mental health components, especially in the state of mind that our country is in today, that everybody should have a mental health check. And, just looking at the access to this stuff, I mean, I think there is a middle grounds to this. And I think that's a great place to start, is what you just stated.
Yeah, totally. So let me flip something on you. Shakespeare quote, Juliet said to Romeo, What's in a name?
You know I don't read.
But let me ask you that. I mean, what's in a name? What does a name mean to you?
Character, morals, values.
Okay. So then would you say that you agree or disagree with renaming buildings, monuments, or places in history based on those individuals' character, values, and morals?
No, I think renaming stuff, again, is if there's things that you're looking at that need to be renamed or up for renaming within the last 10, 20, 30 years, yeah, I mean, that's maybe something to look at. Some, you know, depends on what it may be. But, I mean, things that have created history, and they are history for a reason and to give us education on the times that we were in, I don't think so. I mean, again, the history does not dictate who we are today. Right. It's showing us of how we've evolved. So that's my personal perception of it. And I definitely think, again, there's is over time, there's been so many individuals that have gone through this world that are good, bad, and the ugly. And I think it's important to reflect on all of those to see how we've overcome or how we've benefited from.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people see these monuments or statues or what I call marks of history, right, to be not necessarily a representation of the history that happened or the event that happened or the reason why it's a remembrance. However, I feel like they translate it into whatever the personal intent or belief of the individual was, right? And the reason why I say that is I had a couple of interesting conversations over this weekend, one of which being my dad. And for people that don't know my dad, and for even people that do know my dad, one interesting fact about him is that he's really big into history. And the reason why he is big into history is because it gives us an idea of where we came from so that we can learn from our mistakes to not repeat them again. That's his whole mentality around it. So whether it's a statue of somebody that you absolutely despise, let's talk about, you know, Joseph Stalin, communism, father of it, killed a bunch of people in Russia, starved his own people for whatever the cause was. But to tear down a statue or a plaque or some sort of remembrance of him, I feel like is doing a disservice, because now we're taking out the atrocities that he committed from the front of our mind. Every time I see a Stalin statue, I see a terrible guy with principles to never follow, right? And that's the way I see it. By removing those, it's almost like sweeping it under the rug, I feel like.
Literally was just going to say that.
And when you sweep it under the rug, people forget. We start changing history. We start changing definitions. Well, now we're going to repeat the mistakes that we've just forgotten. That's the way I personally see it. Now, I'm not saying the way I see it's right or wrong. I understand why some people take offense to things. But going back to the overall education system, let's call it that, in the United States, when I'm watching people tear down statues that actually go with their message or cause for the sake of just tearing down statues to try and like make prove a message point. Or yeah. prove a point, or they have a chip on their shoulder, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like there's some discussions right now in society that I don't really have a say one way or the other, whether it's race or religion or what have you. But I also have an appreciation and respect for all sides of history, because it's where we came from. It's, you know, you want to talk about slavery in America, right? It's a terrible thing. Never should have happened, but it did. So I think it's best for us to remember it, reflect on it, so that we never let it happen again.
Correct.
So when we're talking about renaming airports and buildings and this and that, it's almost like we're starting this new witch hunt where everybody is now looking into the history of anything, looking for some sort of point to essentially tear down the whole institution. And, you know, we were talking about statues, and we've been seeing statues being toppled and this and that. And now people are looking at educational institutions, namely Stanford and Yale. The founders of both of those institutions were found to have some racial ties and this and that. And while I can understand the animosity towards those founders, I mean, to say that those schools are the embodiment of the principles of those founders would be a farce, right?
Yeah.
They're not there. They're not in the policy. They're not the teachers. They're not the ones interacting with anyone. They're not even here anymore.
Yeah.
So it's more a memoriam of the person that established it. But to essentially brand a place because of the name and say that they lack the progressiveness or lack the ability to change with the times, right? I don't think that's accurate.
Well, I think you bring up something that's really just an interesting overall, though, is around the divide. I feel like over the last 4 years specifically, and even going into 8 years, I feel like there's just been this constant divide. And it's funny how you look as opposed to us going forward or even staying stagnant. I feel like in a lot of areas we've gone backwards, and we're, like you said, we're looking for things to nitpick and cherry pick of what was wrong. How can we, you know, how can we go back 10, 20, 50, 100 plus years ago to try to change or re-message what that is, as opposed to everybody coming together? I mean, we've seen that this year. I think one of the biggest things that I have a problem with, I mean, for the political standpoint, is just to look at is so much work could have been done as if people would be able to get together and try to come up with a common solution, as opposed to for 4 years in this last term of watching people just be so divided. And it was a constant battle of us putting our tax dollars to work for people to fight against each other, as opposed to helping it be a better place for us. And that's something that I think with all this is just, it's just like, we keep going backwards as opposed to having everybody come together and work together in harmony to try to make this a better place. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And let me,
you follow that, producer Ryan, you feel me?
I do. I'm with you 100% on that.
Let me put a stamp on top of your thought here. So in the last, I would say 10 to 15 years, what we've been doing as a society in terms of splitting further and further apart has been done through labels. Now, the way I see everybody, if you're an American, that's your label. You're an American. You're on my team. I got your back. Hopefully you got mine, right? That's not the general thought process in America anymore. Now it's, are you black? Are you white? Are you Christian, Jewish, Muslim, gay, straight, lesbian, trans? Well, those are two different things. We're putting so many labels.
Liberal, conservative, libertarian.
We're putting so many labels on everything that pretty soon it's going to be like a Myers-Briggs thing to even decide if you want to be friends with somebody or interact. You're just going to walk around with a shirt with 46 different letters that denote like what you like to eat on Tuesday, yes, what language you speak in, what languages you know how to read, what colors you like. Like, it's getting so granular, and I feel like people are unable to essentially have a civil discussion with one another where you put away all that stuff. Like, the way I talk about religion, politics, and the census stuff is, I don't, especially when I first meet somebody. Yeah. There's a lot of people that come out as soon as you sit down at a dinner table for the first time, they come swinging with that stuff. And whether I agree with you or not, it still puts a bad taste in my mouth. It's like, come on. The world is so infinitely bigger than the problems that we're dealing with in our country. There's so many positive things that we can talk about, and people decide to just stew and fester in the negative.
Well, it's like people just want to bring up a form of a splinter, you know, and you, again, as you can't even have, it's, you have to be so cautious with what you say now, is because people are so sensitive to everything. And again, I'm not talking about just being blatantly disrespectful. I'm just talking about having a common conversation. So we were at the park yesterday. We were just having an open dialogue around something that was just non-controversial, but it was just, it's so funny how a couple people around us just had to throw their opinion in and give their perspective. I'm like, dude, I wasn't even talking to you. Like, who are you? You know what I mean? It's just like, I just feel like anybody wants to get in at any given time, as opposed to, you know, just respect for what people's beliefs and what their morals and what their values are. Again, and you don't have to always give your opinion.
Totally. And I mean, here's the thing. If you do, that's fine. But recognize it's your opinion. Now,
don't try to persuade somebody to believe your thought process.
Exactly. So, like, for me personally, and I'll only speak about how I engage with people, if somebody wants to bring me a counterargument to a point that I'm making and provide me with facts and stuff, I'll take the time and due diligence to look into what they're saying. And there's always been times when I've changed my mind.
Right? Don't get me wrong, though. Healthy dialogue is imperative. But just to come, like, again, is it's having conversation around it, hearing out one person and hearing out the other person. Like, I can tell you there's been multiple times where I've had conversations, whether it's on an airplane when you're sitting next to somebody for multiple hours, or you're at a dinner and you're sitting down and you're getting to know somebody that's next to you and you're sitting with them for a couple hours, to have the open dialogue around perspectives that may come up in a conversation, and to be mindful and open to what their thoughts are and having a dialogue. There's many times where I've left the conversation where I'm like, well, I saw that differently, and vice versa for the other people, where there's also two sides to every story, right? And it's more understanding. understand, and I think we all want to have such instant gratification today, where is a lot of people, we don't want to take, I'll speak for myself, is something I focused more on is doing the research and getting more educated as opposed to just being opinionated and understanding stuff, because there is so much knowledge out there now.
Yeah, I mean, information is literally at your fingertips. It's just a matter of being able to sift through the inundation of content, right? And I have to commend you on the fact that you probably do more than what 20% of the population does. You know, 20% of the population just clicks the article headline, reads that, and the article might not even have anything to do with it, you know? And the fact that you can have a civil discussion and walk away to an effect where sometimes your perspective may change. When I do that, I feel like I'm actually growing, and it's very relieving. Like, as crazy as it sounds, and you're probably going to disagree with me, but it's more enjoyable for me to be wrong on an intellectual subject, because then I get to learn something.
And that's the thing though, is humility allows the opportunity for growth. And I think by having those conversations though, and it's going into that, not having an expectation, it's going into it and just being open-minded. And I think that's kind of like the takeaway for today, is I'm going to repeat this almost every single time we do this show. And the reason why we're doing it is to create conversation, open dialogue, have the conversation, is to get more educated, talk to people and, you know, grow commonly together and have those dialogues.
So I like it. So if we're going to give someone a clear cut action for the week, would you say it's go have a conversation?
Yeah. Go into a conversation, open and willing, and ask questions. I think a lot of the times people don't go in asking questions. They go in there as a matter of fact. And that would be my thing, is go ask questions and get educated on something.
And there you have it. So another week on Grumpy Young Men on the Believe Network. Go out, have a conversation, and try and learn something.